Blog Talk Radio.
Fantasy, sports, and politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk back? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face.
Yeah.
You know that's wrong.
It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy, sports, and politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy, sports, and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on. Peace.
Thursday night, 8 o'clock. Yes, this is the FSP Crew Show. Sorry about that, people. This is not the FSP show. This is FSP Crew. The crew is in the house tonight. I don't know if we got sabotaged by our creator or what, but anyway, it's 8 o'clock, like I said, Eastern Standard Time, and I'm here, JT, a.k.a. The Master, along with my two co-hosts, Jeff the Joker and Black the Bookie, engaging in conversation and giving you information about the wonderful world and sometimes wacky world and strange world of fantasy sports and politics. We have a great show in store for you tonight. We're going to talk about some Mr. Armstrong and how he's fallen from grace. We're going to talk to you about Mr. Rodriguez and the almighty Yankees have fallen from grace. We're going to also be going to talk about tonight's game. We're going to talk about tonight's game and some other things that are going on into the sports world. But before we get there, I'm going to tell you this. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220. Chat room is open. I'm in the chat room. And if you like to leave a message or give us a message in there, statement, comment, I always say the same thing. You can do it. We'll respond to it. If not, call us up. You got a question about fantasy, we can answer it. You got a question about anything else or a statement that you want to say, you can do that too. But without further ado, let's get to the show. Let's bring my two co-hosts. Welcome to the show. Welcome once again, guys, Black and Joker. Talk to me.
All right, what's going on, people? What's going on?
Good evening. Happy to be here.
All right, guys. As you know, or as you've known in the past, I think I talked about this last week, mentioned it, but it's gone a little further. Lance Armstrong, who was head of a foundation he had that was helps to advocate cancer research and a spokesman for cancer patients and survivors, the Live Strong Foundation, on Wednesday, both Nike and Trek said they would continue to, as Trek put it on its website, to support the Live Strong Foundation and its effort to combat cancer. But Lance Armstrong is no longer the top man at Live Strong, and Nike has dropped him as a promoter or whatever you want to call him. So, Lance, you got disqualified. And the decision on the USDA, decision on disqualification and ineligibility of Lance Armstrong, which came down almost a week ago. Now, this has hit him. My question to you guys is this. Since he's been stripped of his titles, banned from cycling, taken away from his foundation, and a spokesman for Nike, where does Lance Armstrong go from here? Does he quietly fade off into the sunset, or you think he's going to still be out in the limelight? I'll go to Jeff first and then Black.
Yeah, I mean, my gut instinct is he's going to lay low for a while. You know, eventually maybe he'll come out with a book or something trying to make excuses or explanations or whatever. But remember, for a while, Mark McGwire practically went into seclusion. And
right.
I think, you know, he's out now, but I think Lance Armstrong, you know, until things die down a little, I think he's going to keep a very low profile. But, I mean, he put cycling on the map because, you know, I don't even remember seeing that on Wide World of Sports when I was a kid. And, you know, he kept lying and lying, and everybody on his team kept lying and lying. And then I guess, you know, when guys get subpoenaed and stuff, then they stop lying sometimes. So it's unfortunate because, I mean, I don't feel too bad for him, but, you know, you know, Livestrong did raise a lot of money, and that's going to fall by the wayside. I mean, it'll still exist, but I doubt they're still going to get a lot of donations. You know, it must be very tempting to cheat, but then when you're successful year after year after year, it snowballs, and he kept denying, and now it's come around. So, you know, he's going to be like, you know, in the same breath as, you know, Barry Bonds or Mark McGwire, whatever. Yeah, go figure.
Talk to me, Black.
Oh, man, this is the worst news for Armstrong. This is the worst news. I mean, you knew you were doing these things for years and years and years. You had to find a way. Why didn't you go to Victor Conti, bro? Now, Victor Conti, none of his clients have been prosecuted yet. Could have got some cream or some clear, covered it all up. You've been doping for years. You got to go to Murray and Jones route right now. You got to take all this news in hand. If you're trying to save face and try to get your endorsements back, just come out and apologize. And apologize for deceiving the people all these years, deceiving your people that rep you like Nike, like Livestrong. You just come out with a heartfelt apology. Just go away for a while and then try to resurface. When this story first hit, this was the worst thing that could happen to Lance Armstrong. Me personally, I couldn't believe that they were hiding this with this post office thing for this whole long time, like a whole doping program they had in place for all these years. It still knocks me out to know this information.
Yeah, I hear you. Hey, you know, I guess it was the norm in cycling that in order to compete with everyone else, you had to dope yourself. For years, they weren't getting anywhere. From what I understand, they weren't getting anywhere without doping, or without doping. And I guess the decision was made that if we're going to compete and we're going to be significant in the cycling sport, we got to go along to compete. If you're not cheating, you're not trying, I guess. One of those type of things. So apparently they decided to go that route. And like you said, it was the standard for that organization to do that. And anyone who was involved in that. And I think one of one of his best friend's wife, I don't know if he had a falling out or whatever with him and the wife, that they turned on him and gave him up and gave all the information that supposedly was how it was going, how it was taking place, and how it was masked for so many years. You know, it's unbelievable that, just like you said, Black, for that to take place for such a long period of time and not be, a lot of them didn't get caught. Some of them did, but a lot of them didn't get caught, including Lance. Anytime they took a test, he never failed it. So for this information to come out now and I guess detailed on how they masked themselves from getting caught, is mind-boggling. Seven Tour de France's and accolades worldwide, and talking about crash and burn, this is huge, huge crash and burn. He was the, for a long time, he was a staple for a lot of cyclists to look up to because of his ability to overcome this cancer, for one, and his ability to do what he did for so many years. But the reason he did is because he cheated. So it is what it is. So unfortunately, I think a lot of that happens, not just in a cycling sport, but when you get to a certain level in sports, especially when you're getting paid for it, to stay at the top, some guys, I'm not saying all of them, but some of them, have to give themselves a little edge. Some of them get caught, some of them don't, or some of them are protected from getting caught. I don't know how you guys feel about that, if you want to expand on that or not. Anybody jump in and just go right ahead.
I think that once he got past, because how many Tour de France is the last one? Did he won six or seven?
Seven.
So, yeah, I think once he got past three, you had to know that something was up. I mean, for the sport of cycling, that's a very grueling and intense sport. For you to come back and win seven times, somebody had to know something was up. They had to know something was up after three times winning it, because that's a very tough, tough race.
Mm-hmm.
No one is dominant in any sport for that long. It's rare that you see dominance like that. But somebody had to know something was going on. The jig is finally up. Man, I just still can't believe it, man. Still can't believe it.
Jeff, you got anything to say? What about other sports besides the cycling?
Yeah, I consider, you know, cycling is similar to a lot of these Olympic sports. It's different than the team sports. And it's, you know, they play this game. It's a deadly game. They keep updating the testing, but then they come up with a way to get around it. And a lot of times they're not getting caught for the performance-enhancing drugs. They're getting caught for the masking agents, the diuretics or whatever, to get it out of their system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that, and it's been going on in the Olympics forever and some other sports. And, you know, I'm very much against steroids for a lot of reasons. And I don't know if you remember this, but I was briefly on steroids.
Right, yeah. You told
and
me.
This is not conclusive. It's just anecdotal. It was prescribed by a doctor for a week. It was before I had my tonsils out. And let me tell you, that stuff is no joke. That stuff is for real. Those aren't Flintstone vitamins. And, you know, the doctor prescribes the steroids. I didn't even think twice. I'm like, oh, okay, you know. So I fill the prescription, and I take it like I'm supposed to. This was like, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago or so, give or take. And, you know, I really should have thought twice about it. But, you know, I was like, all right, whatever. You know, so, you know, when I take you know, as prescribed. And I used to go to the gym then, you know, 3 days a week. You know, nothing ridiculous, but I did go, you know, a few times a week. And then at the end of that week, I went to the gym, and I felt like Arnold Schwarzenegger. and I wasn't expecting that, and there's no way it was all in my head, because I wasn't expecting it. I thought it was like a different kind of steroid or whatever. I mean, it's the same stuff, you know, these muscle heads mess around with, except, you know, it was just horrible. I wasn't shooting it, which works even better, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I was like, I had the best workout for 2 hours. I could have stayed in the gym all day. And I just thought to myself, you know, I don't want to mess myself up, because when this stuff is out of my system, I don't want to be in agony, you know. And just from that week, I realized, I mean, this stuff has to be cheating, because if it wasn't, why would they take the chance? I mean, a guy in baseball took the chance in a contract year, and he got busted. And this has been going on since probably before, but, you know, in the 70s in the Olympics, these Eastern European countries just, boom, were kicking everybody's butt, and very suspicious, but they got away with it, you know?
Yeah, you're right. All right. I just wanted to bring
Jeff,
that up.
I wish I would have known you for that 1 week. I would have put you in the ring and made some money that week.
I would have done it. I'm telling you. But it didn't kick in until the last day. You know, it was just like you take one pill the first day, two the second, three the third. You know, seventh day, you're on seven pills, and it's like, woo! You know, felt like the Hulk. Unreal. Absolutely unreal.
We would have dominated the WWE that week.
Oh, yeah, you better believe it.
Okay, let's move on to this. We're going to move on to some football. First, we want to talk about the game. This is strap up your chin strap, real tight type of game. The top five defenses in the NFL, meaning the San Francisco 49ers against the Seattle Seahawks. I can't believe I'm saying this. Two teams from the NFC West that are 4-2. Now, do you guys realize this? There's three teams, I think, from the NFC West that are 4-2. 4-2. There's only two teams, if I'm not mistaken, there's only two teams in the AFC, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm looking at it right now, that are over 500. Yes, I am right about that. There are only two teams in the AFC that are over 500, the Baltimore Ravens and the Houston Texans. Every other team, every team in the AFC East is 3-3. The AFC West, there's two teams that are 3-3 and two teams that have only won one game. The AFC South, the Houston Texans are the only winning team. Everyone else is below 500. And in the AFC North, the Baltimore Ravens, like I said, is 5-1. Cincinnati's at 500. And Pittsburgh and Cleveland are below 500. I mean, have a losing record. That's unbelievable. When in the NFC, there's 5 teams that are 4-2, one team that's undefeated, which is Atlanta, and four teams that are 3-3. That's unbelievable. That's how much parity is in the AFC compared to the NFC. I don't know if you guys realize that or not, but that's the reality of it. There's only two winning teams over 500 in the AFC. You guys want to comment on that? Anybody, jump in there.
One of those teams should actually be 4-2, but that's a whole nother story. Houston doesn't impress me too well, so I have them losing sometime within this month. The teams in the NFC, everything will reveal itself. This is what Pablo Tagliabue wanted years ago with this parity in the NFL, and here it is today.
Jeff?
Yeah, and all four teams in the AFC East are 3-3.
Yes.
But, but this week, Jets are playing New England, and Jets are lucky to be 3-3. You know, everything's relative. I mean, Patriots, of course, expect better than a 3-3 record. The Jets are lucky, and I think their luck's going to run out against New England on Sunday. But, yeah, parity goes back to Pete Rozelle. I think that was something that he was pushing for. And but, you know, as the season goes on, you're going to – despite all the parity, it's usually the same teams or a lot of the same teams winning every year. And at least, unlike some of the other sports, at least in football, the small market teams like Green Bay and New Orleans could win championships because you don't see that in baseball. You know, like, I guess the salary cap really brought about the parity. But they used to have a parity schedule. You know, if you were a last-place team, you got a last-place schedule. And that used to help out teams. They don't do that anymore. But, you know, the way the draft works and whatever, unless you have horrible management, most teams don't stay in last place indefinitely.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, I want to jump into this game. I just wanted you guys to I wanted to express that, let people know that if they didn't know that already, and get your opinions on that. Now let me jump into this before the game's about to start or has started. No, it hasn't started yet. The two teams, like I said, the Seattle Seahawks and the San Francisco 49ers are 4-2, each of them. Whoever wins this is going to command the top part of the division. Fantasy-wise, there's two guys on the Seattle Seahawks that I see are not real good plays. I think one's better play than the other. I don't think Marshawn Lynch is a good play, even though he's a I named him after one of my teams, Beast Mode, which got his ass kicked this past weekend by 80-something points by Ricky, and he decided, you know, I posted on the message board or the chat room. Ricky decided to say something after the fact. You know, I said, you know, it's very just easy to say something after the fact, after you know what the results are, versus talking that same talk that you talked after the fact before. So all I got to say is, Ricky, if you ever listen, try next time talking the talk before you know what the results are. But I still love you, but it's okay. A loss is a loss. 80 points or 1 point, it's still a loss. Only counts 1 week. Fortunately, it only counts 1 week. I like in this game more than the running back of Marshawn Lynch, I like Sidney Rice, because I think Russell Wilson is going to have to throw the ball to do something. And Sidney Rice gets the most targets out of all the wide receivers, including the tight end. So I'm thinking he's going to get about 60 yards. And he may get a chance to get behind the defense to get one of these long passes that he caught last week.
You don't like Marshawn Lynch, you said in this back. Didn't Marshawn do something last week in San Francisco?
Well, that was an anomaly, and I really believe that, because all the weeks before that, San Francisco did not allow anything close to 100 yards. So I'm thinking that they're pissed off, even though it's been a short week. They're pissed off because they got humiliated on national TV at home, and they're going to take it out on their division rival. So I think that they know that the way Seattle goes is through the ground, and they're going to make it a point to stop Marshawn Lynch. And if they do that, then I think it's going to free up Russell Wilson definitely having to move around in the pocket and get throw a pass down, a few passes downfield to Sidney Rice. I think he's going to benefit from that. On the other side, this is going to be a tough game for both teams because of the fact that these two run defenses are extremely tough. I have one team in my many teams I have that has Frank Gore. And I'm crossing my fingers that Frank Gore is able to do something, which I highly doubt, against the Seattle Seahawks. But the staple for the San Francisco 49ers, which they didn't do last week, is to run the ball. Anytime Frank Gore gets, 100 yards or 20 touches or whatever it is, they're 4-0. Anytime he gets less than 20 touches, less than 15 touches, whatever it is, 15 carries, they lose. So they're 4-2. So they didn't run the ball that much last week. They decided the game plan was decided to throw the ball over the Giants. Why? I don't know. Maybe they got full of themselves, for one thing, and decided to see if we can try to pass the ball first and then run later. Well, Alex Smith is not what you thought he was, because he was throwing picks like he was giving away autographs. It was ridiculous. And they were getting to him quite regular, on a regular basis. I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I think Frank Gore is going to be able to run a little bit, but not that much. I think they're going to have to go through the air through Vernon Davis and Michael Crabtree, who both of them are getting a lot of targets, but Davis is the key there. And I think all three of those guys are a decent fantasy play. Gore, you got to play him because he's a top running back. Vernon Davis, you got to play him because he's a top tight end. And Michael Crabtree, for the last few weeks, in fact, from the beginning of the season, he's been a PPR wide receiver that you needed to play. So, you guys got any comments?
I think it's going to be a tricky game because all those guys you mentioned for the San Francisco 49ers, the wide receivers, Seattle has a very tough secondary. I mean, those corners are 6'2"
yes.
and 6'3" on both sides of the ball.
Big guys and hard hitters.
And it's a short week. This is a tricky game because it could be a letdown game. They had the big win over New England this past Sunday, and it's a short
right.
week. And you look at the 49ers coming off of that horrible outing against the Giants. Another short week. A lot of guys are banged up. It was a tricky game for me to pick. But I'm assuming, I'm hoping that San Fran can get it done at home because I need Patrick Willis to pile up the tackles tonight for me.
Jeff?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'm impressed with Russell Wilson. I mean, I thought he could play coming out of college. He looked good in the preseason, but you know, you don't face tough coverages or exotic blitzes in the preseason. He looked like a rookie the first few games, but he keeps getting better, and that's what you look for in a rookie. So I'm impressed with him.
All right,
5'9" and you're right, Jeff. He's learning from week to week. Seems like you can see his knowledge of playing quarterback in the NFL he's learning a lot from one game to the next. I don't know how well he's going to play this week, especially on the road at San Francisco, and it's extremely hot right now, unseasonably hot.
You know who he reminds me of?
Who?
Russell Wilson.
What about him?
You know who he reminds me of?
Ooh, Doug Flutie?
Willie Beeman.
Willie. But Willie, well, he didn't know the plays. All he knew is to scramble around and throw along or whatever. So he didn't know the plays. It took him a while to even attempt to know the plays, because he was purely going on his ability to run, and he had a gun for an arm. Well, yeah, I guess you're right. As long as LL Cool J and him weren't fighting, they were good. Anyway, so that's how I feel about that. I don't know if you guys have any other comments about any of the players.
Who would you pick
in
this game? What would your guys pick be in this game? Would you go with Seattle or the 49ers?
Jeff?
What's the spread?
Oh, the spread.
Good question.
For entertainment purposes only.
I think the spread's like 7.
Wow.
I think the spread's like 7 or something like that, isn't it, Block?
I think... You know, I favor San Francisco to win. I don't know if they could cover it. I think it'll be a close, low-scoring game. I don't know if they can cover the 7.
I think it'll be close, too. Unless I looked, I think it was 6.5.
Yeah, I thought it was somewhere around that, which is surprising to me because these two defenses are pretty stingy. And, I got something else, something on the light side that you guys probably don't realize, or you may realize.
It is seven points. 7 for San Fran.
Okay. I am getting off the beaten path quite a bit here. And this is something on, it's sad, but it's something that I don't know if you guys know about or even looked at. At one point, I've seen this picture more than once. Do anyone knows who Sylvia Christel is?
She was Depp on Cinemax
knows who
a lot.
Cereal Cristel
yeah.
is.
Yeah, she was on Cinemax a lot late night when I was a kid, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sylvia Cristel, who was the first adult film star, dies at 60 for a long battle with cancer. She had throat and lung cancer roughly for about 10 years. The Dutch actress born in Utrecht, Holland, made waves around the world as the star of the 1974 erotic French film, and I saw this film, Emmanuel. In the controversial film, she played the woman after which it was named, a young model, Emmanuel, married to a much older man. The plot revolves around the couple as they move to Bangkok. Christelle's character then engages in a number of extramarital affairs as their husband doesn't seem to mind. Okay? I just wanted to put that out there. I remember watching this when I was, 72. I was 2 years out of high school, so I was about 19 at the time, 18, 19 years old. So, they were happened to be one of my in my formidable years. So I was.
You're formidable years, huh?
Yeah. to say the least, I was pretty wild back in the 70s. So, Emmanuel was a film that I watched more than once. She was, like I said, she was one of the first adult film stars. Let's move on to something else a little lighthearted, since we're talking about women. And we're going to be talking about a little baseball. Wait a minute now. I got somebody in here. I got somebody calling. Are you taking calls? Love the show. Okay. Somebody wants to know if we're taking callers. 347-637-3220. Okay. Let's talk about baseball and the New York Yankees, who got swept by the Detroit Tigers tonight. And like Black told me off air, that their batting average was a sterling buck 88.
You have a $500 million payroll, and that's all your bats can do. 188.
What can I? 188. What can I tell you? What can I tell you? I got somebody where I live who's a huge Yankee fan, and is telling me to stop talking about the Yankees and keep talking about football.
Hey, tell them to send you their address. I have a nice-sized broom for them to pick up, either by FedEx or by UPS.
Uh-oh, I got a couple calls. Oh, I got quite a few calls. I got to watch out here because I'm not exactly sure
who's
calling
in there. Yeah, watch yourself.
Okay, I got – let me bring this caller from the 201 and the guy from Jersey. Let me call this guy first. Call from the 201. Welcome to the FSP Crew Show. You're talking to the host, Jerry. State your name and tell us what you got to say.
Hey, what's good, my man? This is Jerome Johnson from Patterson.
Hey, Jerome, what's up?
Man, I'm chilling on this Thursday night, man. How are you guys doing, man?
Okay,
good,
what's
good.
Up?
Man, I'm just trying to talk some sports. What's going on right now on the show? My friends just contacted me. They said calling the show, so I figured I would ask you guys what's going on first before I start giving my spiel, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, well, you're from North Jersey, right? Patterson?
Yep. Yeah,
Patterson. There's the two of us here. And we are also from the Jersey. You happen to be a Yankee fan?
Hell yeah, man. I'm a big-ass Yankee fan. I'm disappointed we got swept, man, but I expected it after Jeter got injured.
Okay, well, did you watch the game last night, and what do you think of what they did?
Niggers?
Just hold, this whole series?
The series? I think as a Yankee fan, I expected us not to make it because our pitching was just – our pitching is great, but our pitching was not outstanding. And as long as our team is not an outstanding pitching team, I didn't think we were going to win the World Series. But in terms of the monkeys that were hitting for us, they just were missing, and we're a home run hitting team, and if we're swinging like monkeys, we're leaving.
Oh boy, I can't take that. Let's bring this other call in. I think it's a Skype call. Let's see what happens here.
Hello?
Caller from Skype. I think it's from Skype. Welcome to the FSP Crew Show. State your name and tell us what you got to say. And keep it clean,
hello?
My man.
Oh, yeah. Hello. How's it going tonight, guys?
Okay. What's
good,
up?
Good.
My name is John. I'm actually from Manhattan. I heard you guys are from North Jersey, you know, right across the Hudson River.
Right.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm here. He's a huge Yankee fan. You know, after Jeter went down, I knew I actually had a dinner with Derek Jeter's publicist.
What in the world was that?
Is it a full moon tonight?
Oh, man. I tell you, I lost Black because I knocked everybody else off, and I accidentally knocked Black off. Unbelievable. Hey, Jeff, I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess the Yankee fans are pissed off, and they want to jump on here and give it
to
us.
They're looking to vent. Yeah, they're looking to vent. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Anyway, since I was talking about the Yankees, I wanted to talk about something about Mr. Rodriguez. I don't know if you heard that. Hopefully Black will call back in. I don't know if you heard about this or not, but Alex Rodriguez did have a ball. Oh, man, now we got another call from the 201. Let's see who this call is, Jeff.
Oh, can't wait.
Yeah, I know. Call from the 201. Welcome to the FSP Crew Show. State your name and tell us what you got to say.
Hey, guys, this is Raymond Bass. I'm calling in from New Jersey, obviously. What the hell just happened, boys?
I don't know. You tell me what happened.
He spoke some racial slurs in the first one.
Oh, boy. I don't even want to go there, Jeff. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was going to start to say, but...
You got to have a quick hook at this point, yeah.
I'm looking for Black to call back. And anyway... There's Black. Okay. Black, let me tell you something. It must be a full moon tonight because I got somebody else calling here from Skype, and I don't want even
Leave him on Skype.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about baseball and the New York Yankees. And Alex Rodriguez did have a ball delivered to two female fans in the Yankee Stadium crowd during not one, not the two, not game three, not game four, game one of the American League Championship Series, and it was witnessed by the New York Yankees personnel. The New York Post reported that Rodriguez, who had been removed from the game for a pinch hitter, had written a note on the ball in search of one of the woman's phone numbers and had a ball boy deliver it to the fans. The newspaper identified the woman as Kina Tracy, an Australian bikini model, and her friend Kate Quinn. It was witnessed in the dugout. The whole thing is true. When asked about the Post report Tuesday, Rodriguez told ESPNNewYork.com, Wallace Matthews, don't believe any of that, and starts with an S and ends with a T. So... That's what Alex said when it was asked of him. Yankees manager Joe Girardi and general manager Brian Cashman said before the Game 3 loss to the Detroit Tigers that Rodriguez was benched for the matchup with Justin Verlander for performance reasons only, and the source supported that claim. And this is a quote from the source. The only reason that Alex didn't play was because he's been struggling so much against right-handed pitchers. His benching had nothing to do with this story. He would have been in there if the Tigers started a lefty. Even if Sandy Koufax was on the mound, he would have played. Now, my question is this. He said he addressed it and said it was laughable. He says he's been in New York for 9 years, and I've never addressed anything from page six, which is happened to be the gossip page in the Post. And I've never addressed anything from blog to gossip columns. He gets benched. Okay? He gets benched in the game one. And instead of dealing with the game, or staying in the game, he decides to scribble on a ball and tell the ball boy to deliver it to a fan. And then but besides scribbling an autograph or whatever, he probably put his phone number on there. In the middle of a game in the Division Championship, you got to be kidding me. You guys got any comments on this garbage?
At this point, I don't know what they paid Neymar to do. He didn't show up in this series. He didn't show up in the last series. I hope that for the Yankees fans' sake, that they do make that trade with the Marlins that they've been speculating on. I don't know what the player's name, but this guy is just terrible, man. He's just terrible. I mean, you can't go around concentrating on the series and you're sending balls with your phone number to ladies in the crowd, man. This stuff you don't do.
Talk to me, Jeff. I don't know. Are you a Yankee fan?
I'm a casual Yankee fan.
Okay.
I love baseball. I was a big Yankee fan as a kid.
Right.
I kind of lost interest in baseball. You can't help, you know, living in the New York area, you can't help hearing about what's been going on with the Yanks. I'll tell you, if A-Rod was hitting the ball, or maybe some of the other guys were hitting the ball, this would not be a story. The big thing is about trading him to the Marlins, Yankees are going to have to eat some of that salary. How much are they going to have to eat? Because, he's got 5 years, $114 million, I think, left on that contract. And the only thing crazier than paying him that much money to play for the Yankees is paying him that money to not play for the Yankees. I'm curious, and of all people, Donald Trump brought up this point, if the Yankees could get out of the contract because his steroid use hadn't been revealed when he signed it, so he kind of misrepresented his talents when he signed the contract. And, looking back, I mean, I used to be a big baseball fan. Once ballplayers got into their late 30s, you know, they'd still get paid, but they wouldn't get long-term contracts.
Right.
Why did they sign him into his early 40s? I don't get that. I remember some really, some Hall of Fame caliber players, because they couldn't get the long-term contracts, bouncing around a little late in their career. Dave Winfield was one. Reggie bounced around a little late in his career.
Right.
A lot of other guys, not Hall of Famers, but All-Stars, Bob Watson, Dave Parker. Once you get into your late 30s in baseball, you're taking it year to year pretty much. And for some reason, they thought this guy was going to be worth $30 million a year in his early 40s. Must be nice to be him.
$114 million over 5 years, you said, Jeff?
I think so, yeah.
It equates to just a little under $22 million. $23 million a year. It's $22.8 million a year, which is crazy. He gets $22.8 million a year for the next 5 years, and he didn't have a stellar season. Quite naturally, his postseason was like garbage, and now you don't know. I got to believe that they're going to be looking to unload him to someone. And quite naturally, just like you guys are saying, that the Yankees are going to have to eat that salary. And they're probably going to have to eat the majority of that salary if they really want to dump him. Otherwise, they'll keep him and hope that he turns it around from what he had this year. But I don't know. There's been rumblings that these guys are Cano has been like a prima donna, not hustling to first base. There's been guys that just haven't been performing, like Nick Swisher and Cano and a lot of the lineup in Teixeira, especially in the postseason. 188 tells me none of those guys were hitting. The pitchers, like you said, were for the most part, doing their part, even though they lost, I think, 6-7-1 today. And CC didn't have his best stuff, but for the most part, they've been trying to hold the Tigers down. They only lost the last game by 2-1. And that's, you know, guys aren't hitting. And you don't hit. No matter how much you pitch, you don't hit and bring any runs in. You won't win many games, and obviously they didn't. I thought, in my opinion, they wouldn't last past Baltimore, and they did just enough, and Baltimore did just not enough to have the Yankees advance, but to get swept by four the Tigers, who are 4-0. By Tigers. 4-0, who had a lesser record than the Yankees during the regular season. I don't know. I'm not a Yankee fan. I have someone in my household who is a diehard Yankee fan, it's a bad way to go to see the team that you like not being able to perform. You wouldn't mind losing if you were putting up a fight for the most part. But in my opinion, they weren't firing on all four cylinders or all eight cylinders, whatever you want to call it. And they whimpered out of the playoffs in the second round of the playoffs. Anybody want to comment on that before we move on?
Now, I also have a broom on the way to Jersey. Should be receiving that in the morning sometime.
All right. Well, the thing, they're not just not hitting. They're not even making contact.
Yeah.
It's that they're not even having good at bats. A-Rod is, the worst of them. If he's back in New York next year, what is he, a platoon player at this point? Unreal. He looks that bad. Yeah, it's mind-boggling, and the pitching has been good, but they're not the kind of team that can manufacture runs. It's a lot of power hitters,
right?
People have their preferences, but you could have both from the same team. You could have contact hitters and power hitters, and that's a good way to build a roster. And the thing is, everybody wants to play for the Yankees, the big bucks, the spotlight. But you're expected to win it every year, and the Yankees can be a hard team to root for because it's really not a level playing field because their payroll was so much higher than the other teams. It's not a fair competition, but they don't have money players. They have guys who make a lot of money, but these aren't money players.
Yeah. All right, I just wanted to bring that up because I thought that story was pretty interesting. I want to transition back to football, and this is more on a serious note. I'll talk about a player that has been going through it for the last year and still is not clear to play football. I want to read this article in Hindsight, Job at Best and Accountability, which came out of ESPN. Hindsight makes it easy to judge the job at best era. A pair of concussions ended his tenure at Cal, after all, and now two more concussions are threatening his career with the Detroit Lions. Can we wrap up the Lions' decision to draft him in 2010, tie a bow around it, and declare it an unmitigated mistake? Was it a simple matter of overlooking substantial risk in a desperate search for playmakers? Or is it unfair to apply what we know now to a 2.5-year-old decision? We don't know what his pre-draft examinations told the Lions, so we can't evaluate whether his presumed clean bill of health was justified. second, we don't know how much of his current status is wrapped around or wrapped in a concussion protocol that didn't exist in 2010. Both the Lions and the and Best have been silent on that question. The Lions could have predicted the course of events, but they should have be held accountable for risking a worst-case scenario that appears to be playing out. Let's refresh the facts of Best's pre-draft status. In November 2010, Best suffered concussions in his final two games for Cal. The first was reported as slight, a classification that would never be used now, and he missed 2 days of practice before returning to the field. That's when Best suffered the second concussion on a frightening 5-foot fall after a tackle attempt. He lost consciousness briefly on the field and was hospitalized. On January 2nd, nearly 2 months later, Best said, and this is a quote, "I'm still not 100% right now, but I am very optimistic about my ability to come back by the time the combine and pro day come around. I have no doubt in my mind I will be able to perform."
That statement right there should have been the biggest red flag to any team in the NFL. That statement right there that you just read, along with him throwing up in the Maryland game when he got hit by Kevin Bynes. He had a rough season before he came out to the NFL. John LeBest is done. He's done. He would not pass any neurological tests.
He did participate in pre-draft workouts, and the Lions were drawn to his quickness. They believed he was a perfect fit for their offense, and famously coach Jim Schwartz joked that he was aroused by watching his video highlights on YouTube. The Lions traded their second-round pick, number 34 overall, to the Minnesota Vikings to draft Best at number 30. The team swapped fourth-round picks in the exchange, and the Vikings also got the Lions' seventh-round pick. I'm not going to go on to the rest of this article. You guys got an understanding of what took place prior to the draft. My question is this, with 7 minutes left in the show. And Black already expresses his opinion, is Javid Best done, and should he have been able to play in the NFL? And I know hindsight is 20/20, but the things that happened to him in college, the type of concussion protocol and things that happen now weren't in place back at the time when he was in college. Even that, do you still think, because of the things that happened to him in college, that he should have been able to have an opportunity to play in the NFL? I'll go to Black first, who expressed his opinion before, and then I go to Jeff.
Yeah, my opinion rings true. It's not going to change. They should have never. Who was the GM in that time? Matt Millen or Martin Mayhew?
I gotta believe when Jim Schwartz was there, I gotta believe it wasn't Matt Millen. I think it was Martin Mayhew at the time. That's 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Matt Millen was
That was a terrible move by Mayhew. They should have looked at the protocol before drafting this kid. And even then, you wouldn't even have took this kid out. You would have took him in the fifth, sixth, or seventh round, because just that rest alone with the concussions coming in. You already had two concussions before you even entered the NFL. That's a huge red flag. I don't see how any GM could have passed that over. I don't know what Martin Mayhew was thinking, but it was a terrible mistake. You're going to set the lines back a couple of years, unfortunately.
Jeff?
They really put these guys through the ringer at the combine and all that. I'm sure he must have looked okay, because they really inspect them. They say, you know, they treat them like cattle. You know, they put them in their underwear, and they're very thorough. It's unfortunate, and I guess the first thing is, you know, he's a young man. You just hope he could have a normal life, and, you know, playing ball is distant second to that.
Okay. I just wanted to get your guy's opinion on that.
He's saying that he's not going to retire when his family wants him to go ahead and retire. So I hope the young man comes to his senses, because He's going to risk his life if he tries to come back out on that field.
Well, his family tried to get him retired after he got his last concussion, almost immediately after he got his last concussion.
Four concussions, five concussions?
I think it's about at least four. And that was last year. I think it was about this time last year that
How many concussions do you want to go through before you realize that you cannot play football?
Well, speaking of that, man, who just came out and said they had Ed Reed? I'm trying to think. Yeah,
James Harrison
just came out and Jeff refreshed me. He just came out and said he had I don't know how many concussions that he played through.
I think 10.
Yes. And that he played through. I mean, you got to be kidding me. I understand you love the game, but you got to have some type of sense and
you got to have some type of respect for your body, man. You can't.
Exactly.
Your body cannot function through 10 concussions. It's ridiculous.
Well, he's right now he's dealing with other physical issues, so that keeps him off the field right now. I think he's playing. He played last week, didn't he?
Oh man,
I think he did come back. Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm talking about Polamalu. He's another one. And speaking of that, there's another guy that has had concussions because the way he plays, he's had concussions. And he always tries to push the envelope coming back. What do you think about these guys? There's a lot, you know. There's a lot of these guys that have sustained concussions. Some of them are using their sense. Some of them look like they push themselves through it. They have to pass a battery of tests in order to be able to practice, and then they have to sustain that level of passing tests leading into whatever game that they're playing. The next game.
Somebody should put all these guys in the van, round them up, and go see all the long list of former players that are suing the league that are going through concussion-bound injuries and ailments right now. There's no way after seeing all those people that are suing the league and the condition they're in that you would want to keep playing and getting concussed and concussed week after week. It makes no sense.
Well, it's a high impact sport, so you're going to sustain some injuries. But I understand what you're saying, and the NFL is trying to protect guys from themselves by holding guys out if they don't pass a series of baseline tests, they don't play. Some of these guys, I don't know if I can't believe that they can fake their way into playing by passing these tests. Supposedly, they're supposed to be independent doctors that are giving these tests, not somebody that's affiliated with the team. So, it's something to monitor. Quite naturally, he's not going to play this year. We'll have to wait until March, April of next year to see if he's going to try to make an attempt to come back. It's been like a year already, and he's still not. There's still mixed opinions of whether he should be able to come back to play or not. That tells me a year is under his belt, and he still can't. They still have mixed reviews or mixed opinions. It sounds like he's done. I have to agree with you, Black. It sounds like he's done, hopefully he can not have any effects when he gets older in life that he sustained these concussions from football, that it doesn't give him any problems when he is and older. We come to the end of the show. We got about 30-something seconds left in the show. You guys want to say anything? You guys got any parting remarks before we get out of here and go and be able to enjoy this game?
Yeah, make sure you tune in to the Crew Show next week. We'll have Ava, the Lady of Box Knight, on with us, the IBF and WBC champion of the world. Ava Knight will be on the show with us next week.
Jeff?
It's been real. Looking forward to next week.
Same here. Excuse me. Same here. Tune in next week, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. It'll be the FSP Crew Show, and along with myself will be Jeff the Joker and Black the Bookie. Tomorrow will be Mac Williams. We'll be talking about sports. 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, I'll be the co-host. Mac will be the host. On Saturday, be the FSP Show, hosted by Vic Gardner. I'll be the co-host, and also on 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Sunday, be the master plan. I've been giving out some pretty good picks, pretty good players that have been sliding under the radar. Not right now, they haven't been under the radar because they've been coming out and showing out. So tune into that show, and you'll hopefully you'll be able to take some players from that and put them in your lineup, especially in bye weeks, and bring yourself home a win, not an 80-point loss.
Oh, nice.
Anyway, till then, this is JT along with Black the Bookie and Jeff the Joker. We'll talk to you next week. See you later, guys.
Yeah. Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew.